Welcome to Keep Making Movies, the podcast where we explore, shall we say, movies that may have needed a bigger budget. We evaluate the movie for what it is, decide if it could have been improved with the budget, and if it'll join our Keep Making Movies official recommend list. I'm your host, KJ, and with me is...
Tom.
Today we are discussing Katsuyuki Motohiro's Summer Time Machine Blues. This is Motohiro's eighth feature-length film following a bunch of TV shows. In Summertime Machine Blues, we follow a group of university sci-fi club, not losers, you know, they're just kind of dorky. and it starts with them playing baseball. And after baseball, they return to the clubhouse and they break the remote to the air conditioning on a hot summer day. Now, in Japan, a lot of the ACs do not have any buttons on them. You need the remote in order to turn on and off the AC. The next day, they find a time machine in the clubhouse, and they decide to use the time machine to get the working remote from yesterday so they can have air conditioning again. During this adventure, they get nervous about disrupting the space-time continuum, and we get a comedic Back to the Future-style movie where people go back and forth between the 2 days to make sure nothing goes awry, and then there's a bunch of time travel stunts like stealing shampoo from themselves, going 25 years into the future to get a working remote, losing the remote 99 years ago in a swamp only to have it found again by a digging dog in the present day. So Tom, what do you think the goals of the creators were? What do you think the goals of Motohiro and the filmmakers were with this film?
I have to say I'm going to take this a little bit from you, because you had we talked about this as we talk about many things on text, and I think you had an insight that came in text while I was watching this movie, and I think you're right. So I hate to steal this from you.
No.
I think we could probably both talk about this, which is that when you're in your late teens or early 20s, basically you will be kind of useless and just do nonsense things. And so when the most exciting and potentially opportunity inviting thing falls in your lap, what do? You go back in time to get a remote to fix your air conditioner. it's the most unimaginative thing you can think of doing with a time machine. And I think it sort of reflects on, you know, the college kid who's just kind of doesn't know anything and is sort of interested in the immediate pleasure. And these people are in pain because their air conditioning doesn't work and it's extremely hot out. And so the best opportunity falls into their laps, and instead of going back in time and investing money in something they know will, you know, anything that involves effort, they do the one thing that will give them instant pleasure, which is find a remote to turn on their air conditioner. And I think there is something about like the outlook and the sort of time preference of 20-year-olds, where they don't have the time preference to look that far into the future, right? And some of us don't gain that time preference. Hopefully, as you get older, you learn, you know, delaying satisfaction to have a better future. And that seems to be what's going on here. It's like young people just don't have a very low time preference. They want satisfaction now. And the movie shows us that by giving young people a time machine and then doing nothing with it. It's not even bad things or good, you know, it's not bad or good. It's just kind of blah.
Yes, this movie absolutely shows what maybe we all did when we were either in college or right out of high school, or maybe even in high school. When you have you're a free time millionaire, you don't really know what to do. You're kind of bored. You're hanging out with your friends. You're having fun. You're being silly. Like you say, it's not good or bad. I also think the film creators wanted to have fun with the time machine, or with time travel, maybe is a better thing to say. I think they had a few ideas of, oh, what if we did this in a time travel movie? Or I saw this in a time travel movie and I want to include that in my movie. So there was a lot of setup for silly, silly time machine antics, right? They get real close to paradoxes, but never actually hit the paradox. I love the setup and joke with the kappa, the Kami Kappa, the god, and then ends up being one of the guy. Like, all that silly stuff. I really think that was one of the goals. And then I think the reason it kind of worked and what the movie ends up being is what you're talking about, Tom. People in their 20s just hanging out, having a good time. So how do we think they did? Do we think that they accomplished those goals?
I think so. I think it's clear as to what they're trying to do. I think some character development could be done a little better. It takes a little while to figure out who these people are. And to a certain degree, that's fine. But I do think it's a bit of sloppiness, especially in the beginning of the movie, where everybody's just sort of mashed together. And it isn't, I couldn't even remember at first who had gone to see the movie at the beginning, even though it becomes a major plot point later on.
Yeah, one of the things the movie does is everybody starts in a baseball uniform. And the reason they do that is to distinguish between the 2 days. If you're in a baseball uniform, you must be from yesterday. If you're in street clothes, then you're from today, right? But the unfortunate thing is then we're introduced to everybody wearing the exact same clothes. And like you're saying, literally mashed together. These guys come together and like high five and stuff many, many times throughout the movie.
Yeah. And they're also, and it's a really good point about the baseball game. Now, why we can't tell them apart is they're all wearing the same uniform. And the baseball game doesn't reveal their differences either. They all are kind of very bad at baseball.
Yes.
Like there isn't one guy who's like tripping and another guy who's really good. They're all terrible. Mm-hmm. And we have these women who are their classmates who are for some reason photographing them. And so we were sort of like,
Tom, they're in the photography club.
They're in the, I guess so.
That's why they have that dark room.
Yeah, which is in the sci-fi club,
well,
I guess.
Well, I believe there's some dialogue. The photography club used to have the whole building, but then when it got too small, they gave the bigger room to the sci-fi club.
Oh, okay. So there's I guess that's what's going on. Fair enough. But it is kind of like, who are all these people? They seem like the Keystone Cops, right? That you just can't tell the Keystone Cops apart, which is the point. They're supposed to be like a mash of incompetence. And that seems to be what's going on here. And they're doing this, they're playing baseball poorly. And 3-on-3, too, they mentioned, which is like,
3-on-3
you can't load the bases.
Well, so, to get like super specific, there's another thing they reference a lot in this game, which is that game. It's like a video game. It's a black video game cartridge that to me looks like a Famicom game. And I think they call it Eager Beaver. But I tried to look up the game. I couldn't find it. But I wonder if that was a 3-on-3 baseball game and somehow that was supposed to be a joke that they were playing in real life, the baseball game that the one dude seemed to be obsessed with. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. They play a few games. They also play, what is the other game they play with the white and black pieces?
Oh, is it Go?
Othello.
Othello. I think it's Othello.
They play Othello, yeah.
Yep, they do play Othello.
So there's like games going on.
It
seems
like
to be,
when you're in your 20s and you're hanging out in the clubhouse, you're,
what else are you going to do?
Whatever's there, yep.
Mm-hmm. But it is, I think it's a good point on your part. It makes it hard to introduce them. And the next thing we see them in a bathhouse, which is supposed to introduce another plot point, namely the shampoo gets stolen. But again, it's now they're all
naked.
They're all naked. They all kind of look the same. They're all jumping around again and yelling at the same, you know. So it's, you're like, I have no idea who any of these people are or what's different about them. That I think is a problem. And usually like famous actors are useful for solving that problem because famous actors have a certain charisma that regardless of what they're doing sets them apart from the rest of us. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, you know, that might be a flaw in the movie. Now, what do you think?
I think they did great with what they had. I thought it was really well shot. The camera work was awesome. I really liked the score, or maybe just the cicadas that are kind of always cicadaing when they're outside, right? That like it, at least, you know, growing up in New Jersey, the hot summers, that sound, I associate it with it. So that I thought helped with the heat. I also think the movie knew what it was. There's at one point they're talking to the guy that owns the movie theater and he's like, oh, it's a B movie or even a C movie. And it kind of felt like they were talking about, you know, the movie we were watching. So I really think that was all well done. The time travel was fun and good enough. I do think some things were overexplained.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. With the, especially with the 40-year-old professor who keeps drawing those lines everywhere.
Which I'm kind of glad they did, because if they didn't, I certainly probably would have done that on my own, right? And audience that listens to Talking Picture Trivia, you also know Nick. Like, Nick, Tom, well, maybe not so much you, Tom, but Nick and I would have sat down and tried to track the path of the remote, especially if we were in our 20s and nothing else to do. We would have tried to fully understand and make sure that the filmmakers did right by that remote, which then they just did it in the film, which was kind of fun.
Yeah, I think the over explaining is there, and it's a little annoying. It isn't that long though. There's two of those scenes, and one of them we do need, because we need to know the threat is that their world is going to end if they don't get the remote back, right? That's a bit of information that needs to be given to us, because the whole stakes are resting on
that. But it's funny, it turns out to not be true, right? Because at the end, the girl says, I wonder if this all would have happened anyway. And the fact that that statue is there means it all happened. Like, there was never a threat.
There was never a threat.
But yeah, they didn't know that going through, so it felt like a threat to them, at least. Right?
And we didn't know that going through either.
Right.
So until we get to that end scene and we see how everything fits together, it is a potential problem. It also motivate, but we also need that to motivate them not to do more shenanigans with the time machine. Because if there's no danger,
right,
they're just going to get dumber and dumber with
right,
it.
And just
so there needs to be something like, no, we have to stop using this because then the world is going to end if we screw it up in a very small way. So that's that. But yeah, you're right. Eventually, it doesn't really matter very much.
The other strange thing the movie did is, I don't know, maybe almost a dozen times, everybody kind of stops and cheers because something successful happened. Like,
it's
when they find
weird.
The fans in the trash pile, when they realize it's the time machine, Shoga goes in through the time machine. I it's at least a dozen times. And it's so much fun. Like, it's another Keech part. Like, I didn't do that when I was in my 20s, but if you had a group that did, why not put it in the film? You know, that's.
Yeah, I think it's part of the there's a bit of hamminess to everything.
Yep.
Right. They'll cheer, and then they'll all take a photo together. you know, and so on and so forth. They're over the top. All the performances are over the top, especially what's his name, who steals his own shampoo.
I don't know his name, but yes, his eyes, eyebrows, his whole face.
Yeah. Oh, Nimi. N-I-I-M-I is the name of the character. Yeah, who's played.
You can almost imagine, like, they did a take and the director was like, nope, I need more out of you, Nimi. Like, it's not enough. just...
Yeah, but it's like that all the time. And you can see the one character who's the lead, Komoto, he is a bit more grounded than everybody else.
Mm.
And so he almost distinguishes himself because he's a little better looking than everybody else, but he's also not exactly that same sort of over the top energy. And so all of the characters become, they almost feel like a chorus, right? Of just kind of screaming nonsense of hyper energy and whatnot. Which, to your point, that's kind of like, it's like being in your, right, being 22 or 21 or 20 and in college and,
right,
really nothing matters, you know. All you have is time. And so, like, this is what happens. They become this kind of chorus of fools, so to speak, who, mm-hmm, you know, discover that somebody thought they were a god at one point, which they don't, you know, which they're fascinated by. I was going to say, I think also the movie is very kind.
Yep.
There's no cruel characters. Nobody acts meanly. The one thing is, the guy from the future is seen as kind of a dork.
Yeah, but even then, they're not that mean to him. And he keeps saying, like, oh, you guys are so mean. And we're like, no, no one's been mean to you yet. Like, it almost felt like it was cut from the movie that they were supposed to be mean to him or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's the meanest they ever get. Is to say, oh, that guy's kind of nerdy. I hope he's not one of us. And then, like, he is one of them. He fits right in with the rest of them. Turns out he's their child.
Right.
He's literally made from them.
Well, and that's the other thing this movie does. It has a lot of fun time travel examples. When we talk about the Kappa statue, I thought it was funny when Komoto stays the night in the locker room to show, like, oh, you can go back and then just stay and not take the time machine back to today. Like, you can bridge that gap. Going to the future to get the remote, that was a fun...
Yeah, a little
right?
episode.
Like that's, mm-hmm. Yep. Fun little episode and a fun way to play with time travel that the characters hadn't thought about before, right? They kept saying, oh, we'll go to the past to get the remote. And then the idea, oh, no, wait, we can go to the future to get the remote too. Like, that's just another fun way to play with time travel. Making the joke about how the sci-fi club house room looks so new when Mushroom comes back.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, it looks old. Taking the Vital Sassoon from itself. That was so funny. It was specifically Vital Sassoon. And they kept saying it over and over again. And then they even say, you just like saying that over and over again. And then the owner of the bath asking if they're identical twins because, you know.
She saw them, you know, she saw their twins. And
right, the doubles.
At least look at our faces.
Right. I thought those jokes were.
Yeah, that was funny.
And then Ketra finding, the Ketra the dog finding the remote. And then the parents. So I feel like they played around, like a lot of time travel tropes were in here in a very comedic and non-important way for the plot, so to say. You know, there was no stakes, there was no weight behind any, it's not, it was never like, oh, if we don't do the thing with the gizmo, you know, something bad. Like the payoffs were light, the setup was light.
Yeah, I thought at one point that Mushroom would be scared, he'd be trapped in the past. He doesn't seem to care, he just
they don't
walks
mind. Oh yeah, take the time machine. Yeah, no, go ahead,
come back whenever. I you know. And it's like clear he's not gonna have a problem. He seems more worried about losing his camera than
the time machine.
Yeah. Nope. Yeah. Though somebody should have told them in 2005 that in 2030 no one's using film. I can assure you that practice is done with.
Well, no, I think that was part of the joke too, because he had that because it was his mom's.
Well, that's part of that's the thing that lets you know he's the child of this woman. And now our main character potentially is going to be his father if he can successfully change his name.
The what a silly throwaway! Like, why don't you just have the name? The other like wake up call for me was, I didn't realize this movie came out in 2005. So when they kept saying like, oh, 2030, I'm like, 2030 is not. Oh my, this movie's almost 20 years old. Did not feel like a 20-year-old movie, at least to me. Like, I don't know, the cell phones were a little dated, but.
Yeah, they're not using their cell phones in the way we use them.
Yep.
All the time. You know, it's an extension of our minds. It's still a means of communication for them.
So do we think a budget would have helped this movie?
Yeah, I think so, because I think you would have some A-list actors to help with that kind of character delineation. I think maybe a little more variety in the sets would have helped too. It is not the most... You like the cinematography. I actually wasn't that thrilled with it. I appreciate how they made it feel hot, but it's sort of overlit. And I think a little more variety in the locations. And that doesn't mean they have to violate the spirit of the movie, which is we're not going to do anything interesting with this time machine. We're stupid kids.
Well, so let me clarify too. So the cinematography I did enjoy, but I think I'm comparing it to our other movies that we were doing for this show.
So
it felt
relative to
some of those. And you know, I don't know what the budget was for this movie. This may have had a higher budget than some of the other keep making movies that we've been doing.
Yeah, I couldn't find it.
Yeah, that information I struggle to find as well. But if I do think if you added more, you know, A-list actors, I think you'd need to improve the plot as well. I don't know this plot would work as well, right? The A-list actors aren't going to be like, there's the remote, yay! Like, you're going to have to change a lot. And then, like you said, you're going to have to improve the sets. There was, what, 3 or 4 sets that all kind of looked the same? It was that gray and white, right? One kind of looked like the clock from Back to the Future. The clubhouse was fine, but you don't get a good sense of, you didn't feel like you were in there. And I think all that would have had to have been improved. And I would be nervous you would change the heart of the movie, which was people in their 20s wasting time, right? Yeah. Would it feel more like American Graffiti or Dazed and Confused if you started to up that kind of stuff?
Yeah. I mean, American Graffiti is also about people kind of wasting time, right? As is Dazed and Confused. The difference here is it's so much. I mean, American Graffiti has a bit of sentimentality to it that this movie doesn't do at all. Even when it's about, at its heart, there's a romantic, not at its heart, but there is a romantic interest in the movie. The movie doesn't sentimentalize it at all. It's, right. You know, it's just sort of there.
But could you imagine if in American Graffiti, a major plot point was they had to go back to Friday night to like solve something?
It wouldn't work for American Graffiti, but you know, the idea of like riding in a circle is sort of what I think of American Graffiti, right? They're always riding in a circle in that main strip. And if you're not going off to college or something like that, you're just one of these people who eternally rides in a circle. You're sort of always trying to travel into the past because you're just sort of wasting your time. This movie is sort of also about wasting your time, but it's the joy of wasting time as opposed to the potential danger of it.
I'm gonna disagree a little with Tom. I think in American Graffiti, I think most people in that movie are enjoying that night out.
They're enjoying that night out, but it's also the end of it. And we see that one guy with the white T-shirt.
Right,
who
right.
Drives
he's
a little
the
girl
exception,
around.
Right?
He's the exception. He's also what happens when you don't grow up, when you don't go to college, when you don't leave. You become that guy. Yeah.
I understand, but I guess what I'm trying to say is I think what makes this movie work is it's so kitschy, it's so silly, that if you did have the sentimentality, is that the
right? Oh, I don't think they should have that. No,
right?
That's not
and
what I'm saying.
I think if you up the actors, I don't know what else you would do, right? You would start to, like, the actors would want to do something, and I don't know what they would do. It's like, so I'd be nervous. If you gave a mouse a cookie, this whole thing would start to crumble under its own weight.
Yeah, I think that's fine. I think, yeah. So, if they had a larger budget, would it fix it? Maybe you're right. Maybe it wouldn't. That doesn't mean I still wouldn't want more character development or delineation.
Yeah, delineation.
And maybe a little more stakes. I mean, it's hard to believe ever that the world is going to end, you know. there isn't exactly the sense of the pressure cooker. I was far more uncomfortable by the fact they seem so hot than the world
right,
is potentially going to end.
Yeah.
You know? But I think a budget wouldn't, well, even if we disagree about the casting, I do think a little variety in the settings.
Or I was thinking if you took the budget and put it into the clubhouse and then got rid of the other sets and had the whole thing take place in the clubhouse, it would feel more like a play.
Mm-hmm. Which it was based on.
Oh, was it?
Based on Uday's play, 2001 play.
Oh, so it could have been a remote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's...
That's really funny. I would love to see that play, actually, if it's... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If it's the same thing, yeah. I don't know anything about the playwright.
Yep.
Yeah, so it's based on a play, and you could see that, right? There's the kind of singular location.
Right, the clubhouse.
You know. Yep. Yeah. So maybe kind of blowing that up a little bit, creating a little variety.
And, you know, that kind of informs the acting, too, probably. Like, at least in musicals, everything you do is over the top, kind of like the Vital Sassoon guy. Like, that might have gone hand in hand with what they were trying to do.
Yeah, maybe. I think it's just... I think it's an acting style that you see in a lot of non-American or non-European movies. I think there's something about like the influence of method acting in American and European movies that does not permit that kind of over-the-top thing, except in kind of spoofy comedies, in which case we're secure that it's a spoofy comedy, so we know, so it's okay. I think in other cultures and other movies we've seen from different places that aren't necessarily as influenced by the, you know, the Stanislavski stuff or the method acting stuff, this kind of over-the-top, what we think of as over-the-top, is perfectly fine. And I think it suits the movie too, and it suits the spirit of it. Yeah, I really, I liked the lunatic chorus element of it, with the kids in the high five and everybody takes a photograph together. it's sort of bonkers. It takes a moment to get used to, but it's sort of bonkers. I maybe a little more distinction in who these different people are, as opposed to there's the lead who kind of likes the girl. I couldn't remember which girl he liked because the girls are indistinguishable from another from one another. That's a problem, I think, as well. I'd like to see more from them, or more from one of them anyway. And you have the shampoo guy, you have the guy who's the god, the he gets mistaken for the god, and there's like a few other ones, and you're like, I'm not, you don't have anything to do, so you're just one of the people, you know. So yeah, that could use a little help.
The so to refer back to another movie we've done on the show, Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes, I'm pretty sure the time cops in that are two of the kids in this. I think the Kama Kappa god and I think Mushroom, the guy that comes from the future,
are
the time cops in
who come Beyond at the end. 2 Minutes.
Yeah, I don't know if that's just by chance or if, you know, those guys and these guys
know each other,
all hang out. Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, what do you think, Tom? Does it make our list?
Yeah, let's throw it on.
Yeah, I think it should absolutely. Like, a big smile on my face after this movie. You know, I enjoyed it all the way through. Well, it takes a little while, like you're saying, to get into, but I do enjoy it all the way through.
And we were saying you should keep making movies, but this director has made, I think, about 20 movies
since then
he has made 13 movies.
Wow. Well, it's official. Summertime Machine Blues has made the list. So keep making movies, Katsuyuki Motohiro. And maybe we'll check out another one of his films. What's your favorite movie by Katsuyuki Motohiro? Let us know on social media at Talking Studios.
You can rate and review this show anywhere fine podcasts are available. For those viewing in YouTube land, if you haven't already, please like this video, subscribe to the Talking Studios channel for all our exciting content, and follow us on social media at Talking Studios. Check out other shows by Talking Studios, including Talking Pictures Trivia, where we explore movies through trivia, Limited Lexicon, where we play through text-based adventure games, Get the Point, where we slowly reveal a movie poster and try to guess which movie poster it is, and Adapt It, where we explore adaptations in various forms. Got a question for us? Call the Talking Studios hotline at 201-467-8679 and leave a message. It may be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Keep Making Movies, wherever fine podcasts are found.
Join us next time when we discuss Cube from 1997. Stay tuned for our first impressions of Cube. Next week, we'll be discussing Cube from 1997. Tom, how was your watch?
This is my first watch of Cube. I will say I have not seen the sequel or the third film or the Japanese remake.
Oh, I wanted to watch that.
I visited the Wikipedia pages and read the summary because I thought, I don't really need to do this again. But anyway, Cube is a movie on film. I think, let me start this again. I'm kind of rambling. So yeah, this is my first watch of Cube. I haven't seen the sequel. I haven't seen the third one. I haven't seen the Japanese remake, and I probably won't, though I visited their Wikipedia pages in order to get the lowdown. It's a sort of movie, I think it's the first one we've seen where it's like there is a so bad it's good element to it, where you have a tremendous amount of kind of hammy acting and really sort of silly dialogue that's being bandied back and forth. And that's kind of enjoyable. The mystery of the cube is probably less interesting than than having to watch these poor actors mangle or get through this dialogue. I think that's more fun. The ingenious part of it, I suppose, would be the fact that they have managed to create a dynamic setting that doesn't actually change. That there's this illusion that it's changing, that they're moving from one cube to the next cube to the next, when it appears to be just the same set. And yet you do feel a sense of movement. The movie doesn't actually feel static. I think that's probably the best accomplishment that the filmmakers had gotten out of this project, is that, you know, it feels like we're moving from scene to scene. And that was pretty cool. I think that worked pretty well. How about you, KJ? What were your first impressions?
Well, so I think this might have been the first micro-budget film I had seen. So really, if it wasn't for Cube, we wouldn't have been doing this Keep Making Movies podcast.
No, I think, there we go.
Yeah, this piqued my interest and had me sought out other micro-budget films. Yeah, and on this watch, I enjoyed every minute of it like I did the first time that I saw it. Audience, you're going to love this movie. Don't take it too seriously. Yeah, just let it happen. And like Tom said, there's kind of one set, and it's really cool how they reuse the one set to make you feel like it's there's a lot more going on than there is. I watched it on my laptop, so I kind of recommend the same. You don't really need a giant screen or anything for this one. Yeah, so audience, go enjoy Cube. It's available on Prime Video. That's Amazon's Prime Video at the time of this recording.
Wow, Talking Studios,